talk about magic. And the issue which we went through about, like I said last week, about half of the section Dalet here in the Be'er HaShani. The difficulty which he was dealing with, again, following the theme of this perek, of this Be'er rather, where we're dealing with words of the Chachamim that seem, you know, counterintuitive or counter to that which we would normally consider working and appropriate, was this statement of Chazal that they said that by Kishuf, with regard to Kishuf, there are three types of things, like we have by Hilchos Shabbos. Some acts of Kishuf are chayev, are punishable. Some acts of Kishuf are poter aval oser, they're forbidden, but there's no punishment. And some acts of Kishuf are mutter. And the Gemara says, and the example of the ones that are mutter, of Chanin or Avashia, that every Erev Shabbos they would use the Sefer Yetzirah to create for themselves an eglatilsa, to create for themselves a nice cut of meat. So the Gemara, the problem that people have with this, he says, is that here you're saying that you're allowed to do Kishuf, you're allowed to do sorcery. And what he explained was that the term Kishuf, which we're using here, is in a very general sense. Of course, if the Torah says that it's mutter, it's not the Kishuf that the Torah forbids. But the term Kishuf comes from the term Makhish Pamalia Shomala, the Gemara says. That which goes against the normal heavenly court, the normal routine. And indeed, there are ways that all of these actions that we're describing over here are in that category of things which go against the normal routine. They go against the course of nature of the way the normal Pamalia Shalmala, the normal way the heavenly court would have done things. However, there are two ways of avoiding it. And one way of avoiding it is by invoking and getting involved in those worlds, in those intermediate forces, as we discussed and described last week, as I learned with you the Sefer HaChinuch, where a person is somehow able to intervene on this level, on this metaphysical level, that sort of working with the elements of creation that are what we call mystical, esoteric, not the normal, not the conventional, working with them and in that way altering the Bria, altering creation, something which we are not supposed to intervene with. And then he says, the parts which are mutter is when you also try to defy the normal course of nature. But how do you try to defy it? By invoking Hashem. By invoking Hashem himself. And asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu to do something different. And that, he says, we do it every time we daven. Every time we daven, we ask of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he should do something to change things from the way it would have just happened, the way it would have just unfolded, left to its own devices, left to the regular Pamalia, so to speak. And likewise, when a person goes and they use HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when they exercise HaKadosh Baruch Hu somehow through the invocation of the Shem HaMeforosh, through using Hashem's name, like Rav Ashi did, Rav Sheshes, and Rav Chanina and Rav Ishia, like they did on every Erev Shabbos. So then again, what you're doing is you're using the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. What's the problem is where the person uses those other forces within the world and tries to somehow redevelop, change, or alter Hashem's Bria.
Was it too cool to buy? That's why they did it?
So that's where it's going to be permitted. That's where it's going to be forbidden. And if you remember, I mentioned that that's how the Maral is masbir, how he explains why do they say kehilchas Shabbos. In every area of halacha, there are things which are punishable, which are the eraisa, things which are in between, forbidden rabbana, and things which are permitted. Why do they choose the example kehilchas Shabbos? Because when you're dealing with Kishuf, you're dealing with the same thing that you're dealing with in Hilchos Shabbos. In Hilchos Shabbos, we're talking about Hashem created the world in 6 days, and on the seventh day He rested. And we are not supposed to resume and to continue and to say we're going to add to Hashem's Bria. We're respecting that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took the Bria to where it would need to be, and it's not in our place, it's not the role of man to try to somehow go beyond. It's a point of arrival. It's a point where it gets to. Now, yes, lasais. There are points where we're supposed to go on, where we're supposed to continue with our activity, with our creativity within the world. But Shabbos is a suspension of that, in a certain sense, saying, you know, this is how far it goes. This is how far HaKadosh Baruch Hu created it. It's stopping the Bria where it is. And in a certain sense, that's as well, as we saw in the Sefer HaChinuch, Kilayim and Kishuv, where also what the person may be doing is mixing, intervening in the world as HaKadosh Baruch Hu has created it, and trying to go beyond, trying to fiddle with the world of Hashem in a manner that's not considered to be appropriate. That's the same issue. So that's why we borrow Hilchas Kishuv, Hilchas Shabbos. That's why we put these two things together. In a sense, what this mitzvah really, really speaks of to a great degree, what this notion, the way the Maharal is explaining it, and the way the Sefer HaChinuch is explaining it, and the way the Sefer Teiras Moshe Rabbeinu, you've heard of that one, right? The Torah, right? That's the way it explains it, is all very, very much on the same vein. And that is that there is a certain point where we come to the level where we say, Tamim Tiyayim Hashem Alekecha. A person is supposed to be trusting of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Trusting of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and not trying to do an end run around him as things unfold. Now, I want to talk about this a little bit before really going on in the Maharal. I want to talk about this idea a little bit more, I think a little bit beyond what we talked about last week. There's a Sefer, which I'm holding in my hand, it doesn't come out on the tape recorder, Tamim Tiyah, okay? Tamim Tiyah is, it means you should be whole, you should be trusting of HaKadosh Baruch. This Sefer Tamim Tiyah is a very interesting Sefer, it's a very interesting history. It is, I think, almost unique in certain sense in contemporary history. This Sefer was commissioned by Kama, by a whole number of Gedolei Yisrael, and including the Bedatz of the Eidah Haredes, the Bezdin, the High Court of the Eidah Haredes in Eretz Yisrael, and so on, that they asked Rav Yaakov Moshe Hillel, who is a chacham, who was a big sage in the known, in the open, and in the hidden aspects of Torah. They asked him to write a sefer about this mitzvah of Tamim Tiyayim Hashem Elokecha. And the issue that they were addressing was the practitioners that had become, and still are, widespread of practical Kabbalah, of trying to use all kinds of methods, mystical methods, in order to create outcomes. And the question would be the appropriateness of invoking those kinds of things. The appropriateness of using Kabbalah in this kind of a way, in a functional way. A good anecdote is that there was somebody here this week in Baltimore. His name is Rav Avraham Moshe Jacobowitz. And he's a very interesting man. He's a Satmar Chassid, and he took it upon himself when he was still learning in the Kailo to try to help people who were trying to have children in being able to identify for them the best resources that were available for them. So you have this man was a Satmar Chassid, now stands with his payas, with his beard, with his very, very simple, very fine, very erlich. Is extremely, extremely well versed in all of the scientific and medical protocols and that which is out there and that which is available for fertility treatment, something which is very, very needed. And he reads all the journal articles, and he's familiar with what's available in this hospital and in that hospital, in this state, this university, what they're experimenting with, that's experimenting with, and he's a resource for people who are trying to have children. So he was here this week. So somebody asked him about segulas. So he said he tells people segulas are fine. says, just hold on to your wallet. You know, you have to be very, very careful about sometimes people can do things that unfortunately will take advantage of the vulnerable, and people do have to be careful about that. Sometimes vichtig, sometimes appropriate, sometimes not so appropriate. So in this sefer Tamim Tia, he talks about this mitzvah of being trusting in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, avoiding methods which would be considered perhaps forbidden by the Torah, because they would fall under the category of ma'ainanim v'kaismim, of different kinds of sorcery, different forms of kishuf. And then, on the other hand, things which may not be kishuf, may not be sorcery, but would be a non-fulfillment of the positive mitzvah of tamim tiyeh im Hashem aleikecha, of relying on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Relying on HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't mean necessarily that the person just sits back and doesn't do anything. It means that the person's efforts will be, number one, directed mostly towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu, within the framework of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to happen, not trying to do, again, an end run around him, like we mentioned last week at the end, Bilam HaRasha, who was also a great sorcerer and very, very knowledgeable of Hashem, but his MO was to try to find the cracks in the armor where he'd be able to get around HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He didn't want to do the Ratzon of Hashem. He had what he wanted to do, and he did it until Hashem, so to speak, bent to his Ratzon. On the other hand, we have this positive commandment, this mitzvah of Tamim Tiyeh Hashem Elokecha, that a person should be able to be trusting. Rashi says, Tamim Tiyeh Hashem Elokecha Lo Tachkor Achar Ha'asidus. Don't be so concerned about what's happening in the future. You can trust in Hashem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is taking care of you. Hashem is with you, and therefore you can go and rely on Him to a certain degree. And this idea that while changes in nature may be desired, may be called for to invoke it, but to turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, certainly not to do that which would be forbidden in that realm, but to still, in any case, view HaKadosh Baruch Hu as the master of the world, who it's His to overcome whatever has been in place already, is a very, very important part of going after HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Ramban, who counts it as a mitzvah d'oraisa, Ramban who counts it as one of the 613 mitzvahs, Tamim Tiyeh Hashem Elokecha, emphasizes this very, very strongly as the mitzvah generally, and within the life of Avram Avinu, and so on and so forth. He describes, like the mitzvah where HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to him, Yisalach Lufanai Ve'yeh Samim, by the mitzvah of Bris Milah, all over the place. Ramban speaks about this idea of being able to sign oneself over, to be trusting of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this manner.
Ramesh, how do you reconcile that with the asking for mutter and the tainesim and the like?
We're going to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to do. Hashem wants us to turn to Him and to be mispalel. It's not disturbing Hashem to do it. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu misave l'tfilas anshel tzadikim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants tfilas. V'at HaKadosh yoyshev tfilas Yisrael. Says the pasuk v'chol siach hasaret terim yivaretz v'chaleit hasaret terim yitzmach kilayim tiyah Hashem alikim al oretz. Nothing sprouted, nothing planted, because Hashem didn't bring rain, because there was no man to work the ground. Says Rashi from the Gemara, why was there no rain? Because there was no person yet to ask for it. When man came into the world and he asked for it, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought it. That's part of the system. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to be misbal. Turning to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and asking for things is not going around the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. It's mamish going to the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, and it's using it and it's invoking it. It's invoking the Rabbeinu Shel Olam in that way. That's it. And in a certain sense, the way the Maral expresses it, and the way others say it, it's a less dramatic way of using the Shem Hashem in order to bring about results. Using the Shem of Hashem in order to bring about results. Now, the issue which I want to address here, however, is the idea, what Rav Chiya and Rav Eishiya did, which was using the Shem Hashem in a way, like through the Sefer Yetzirah, through the Book of Creation, in a way which seems to be much more controlling. and much more controlled. Actually, not saying Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melekeinu Aviseinu, you know, Chaneinu Meitcha De'a Bina V'Haskel, give us wisdom, give us health, but actually doing something which produces this kind of instantaneous result. Halahargeni Atayimer, Moshe Rabbeinu used the name of Hashem to destroy the Mitzri, to destroy the Egyptian, and so on and so forth. Using the name of Hashem to create the animals that they would be able to eat L'Kavod Shabbos. That seems to be a far more manipulative kind of the use of the name of Hashem. And the Maral again validates it because he says, L'maisa, in the end, you're turning to Hashem. Yes, you may be able to be more skilled and more adept at being able to get a response, at being able to get a result, but ultimately what you're doing is you're turning to Hashem. In Chazal, even in the Halacha, we find this discussed with some ambiguity. The Gemara in Yevamos tells a story about Yeshaya, where Yeshaya was confronted by Menashe. Menashe ben Chizkiyo, who was the king, evil king in the Jewish people. And Menashe confronted Yeshaya, the Gemara says, about a whole number of contradictions that he saw between the words of Yeshaya and the words of the Torah. Menashe, who was Mamed Etzelem Behechal, who put an Avodah Zarah in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, or in the Kodesh, in the Heichal, in the building of the Beis HaMikdash, Menashe was taking the prophet Yeshaya, who spoke against the Risha, the evil in Klal Yisrael, many, many times. He took him to task for the words which he said which went against the Torah. And the Gemara says that he brought a whole number of questions to him, and Yeshaya said, well, what am I going to do now? I'm going to try to defend myself. I'm going to respond to him. He's an evil king, and he ain't listening. He's not going to follow what I have to say. So therefore, what Menashe did was, he used the name of Hashem, and he turned himself into a tree. Okay? He tried to escape. But Menashe found him, or whatever it was, and they chopped down the tree. And the Gemara says, when they got to the part of the tree, okay, I'm just telling you what the Gemara says. When they got to the part of the tree which was Yeshaya's mouth, that's when he was killed by Menashe. So as the Gemara says, that they found the Sefer Yochsan that says Menashe killed Yeshayo. This is the story of how Menashe killed Yeshayo. Says the Gemara, why did he die when it got to his mouth? Because Yeshaya himself said, "Uvaseich am tmeis vasayim anech yeshef." I am sitting in the middle of a nation that's tmeis vasayim, that their lips are impure. So the idea is that if you're in the midst of a nation that their lips are impure, for you to invoke the name of Hashem, which has to be invoked b'kedusha uvetara, like we say on Yom Kippur, right, when the Kohen Gadol would sound the name of Hashem. Remember those times we keep bowing down, right? When they heard the name of Hashem coming out of the mouth of Kohen Gadol, b'kedusha uvetara, with holiness and with purity. The circumstances for using the name of Hashem are very, very demanding. They're very, very high. And so, Lemaisa, we won't use the name of Hashem. Yeshaya was taken to task for using the name of Hashem. So we won't do it. Now, Rav Chiya and Rav Yishya did do it. Right? They did use the Sefer Yetzirah, which in a certain way is using the names of Hashem, Ki Bukha Hashem Tzurei Lamim, that they used the name of Hashem in order to create and in order to develop, in order to change. But on the other hand, Yeshaya used it and was taken to task for it. So it's obviously something that we are very, very careful about. To use the name of Hashem in these dramatic ways, to invoke it, is not, you know, don't try this at home, kids. This is something that a person has to be very, very careful. And Lemaisa in Halacha, which it's discussed in Yeridea, in Hilchos Meinim Mechashev, that we are extremely, extremely, extremely reticent to do this kind of thing, because it's understood that even if it does work, and even if it's not included in Kishuv, but it's the kind of usage of Hashem, of Hashem's name, with regarding which one has to be extremely, extremely respectful, extremely careful. Just like we don't take oaths using Hashem's name, because we're extremely cautious about this, so the same thing is going to be true over here. And I would also just note one more thing, which is not noted by the Maharal, but which I think is very, very much part of this idea of Tamim Tiyah. I cannot explain to you exactly why by Rav Chiya and Rav Ishiya it was appropriate, other than to say that presumably they knew what they were doing and they knew the circumstances under which this could be done. But when it comes to using HaKadosh Baruch Hu within the Bria, when it comes to turning to Hashem within the Bria, there could also be two ways to do things. There could also be two ways in which we accomplish things. Two manners of tefillah. And I'd like to explain it in this way. We have three patriarchs, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And they correspond to three midos, three primary character traits, three primary directions in the service of Hashem. What are they? Torah, Avoda, Gemilus, Chasadim, right? The three pillars on which the world stands. Torah, worship, and kindness. How are they corresponding to that? So according to virtually all, Avram Avinu corresponds to Gemilus Chasadim, to Chesed, Chesed li Avram. Avram is associated very strongly with kindness. Yaakov Avinu was the Yoshev Aholim, the one who lived in the tents of study, the tents of prayer. Titein Emes li Yaakov, give truth to Yaakov, truth is Torah. Right? Emes Kenev Al Timkor, it's Torah. So that was Yaakov Avinu, was Torah. And Yitzchak, who was the Akedah, right, who was the Nechat, who was the one who was brought as an offering to Hashem, represents Avodah, represents worship. The service of Hashem through worship. Torah, Avodah, Gemilus, Chasadim. Those three. So the thing is like this. Yitzchak had a brother. Yitzchak's brother was somebody named Yishmael. Yishmael, interestingly, also had this great thing going when it came to Avodah, when it came to worship, when it came to Tefillah. What was the rule with Yishmael? Shama Elohim El Kol Anar Basher Husham. Why was he called Yishmael? Because Hashem will listen to the voice of the child. Hashem heard the voice of Hagar when she was crying. Hashem heard the voice of the child when he was crying. Yishma Kael. Hashem will hear. Yishmael's prayers have a tremendous ability to have an impact. They are very, very strong. That's part of what is so frightening for us when we look in terms of the Masav Simon Labanim and current events and its relationship to biblical events. In the original map, the original plan, it is of such great concern to us when the Jewish people face up against Yishmael, that prays significantly, right? They pray there five times a day, more than us, and that they have this assurance of Yishmael that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will listen. So Yitzchak, Avoda, together with Yishmael, also Tefillah, also having this power. Is there a difference between them? What is the relationship? What is the idea, what is the connection? And we understand they're both brothers, they're both the children of Avram Avinu, they both have this similar manifestation but of Avodah, but is it the same thing? And I believe that there's a big difference between them. And the difference is like this. The difference truly is found in Jewish prayer. There's a famous story in the Gemara. The Gemara tells a story about Chayni HaMa'agel. Right, Choni HaMa'agel, Choni who was the one who made the circle. What's that mean? So once upon a time, the Jewish people needed rain. The Mishnah tells the story in Maseches Tainis. Once upon a time, the Jewish people needed rain very, very badly, and they tried their best, and they davened very hard, and they were not successful in getting rain. So they turned to Choni HaMa'agel, and they said, Choni HaMa'agel, you're a tzaddik, you go and you daven to Hashem that we should have rain. So Choni HaMa'agel went and he drew a circle and he said, Rabbeinu Shel Olam, I just want to tell you that I'm going to stay right here and I'm not going to move until you bring rain. So what happened? So rain began to fall and but it was only very, very, very minor little mist. So Choni HaMa'agel said, you know, I didn't ask for this. I asked for rain that would fill the reservoirs. So it started to rain incredibly excessively, So Chaim Adol said, I didn't ask for this either. I didn't ask we should be washed away by the rain. I wanted rain that would be positive. So finally, whatever it is, they get it right. And then it keeps raining and raining and raining, and even though it wasn't raining so forcefully, but still, it was becoming too much. A whole story over there in the Mishnah about Chaim Magil going back and forth and getting it just right. So the Gemara says that the Chachamim sent a message to Chaini. And they said, Chaini, il mole Chaini ata. If not for the fact, could I ask you for the tinus, if you could just get over there? If not for the fact that you were Chaini, we would be gozarni alecha nidui. Gozarni alecha nidui. We would sanction you. We would put you in cherem. If not for the fact that you were chayni, we would decree upon you a nidui. We would put you, we would excommunicate you for what you've done. But what can we do? You are mischate, you do wrong, so to speak, before Hashem. You act obnoxious before Hashem, and nevertheless He fulfills your word. Like a child who can be obnoxious and difficult, and the parent will go along with him. Regarding you, the pasuk says, "Yismach avicha v'imecha v'sagil yeladetecha." Your father and mother will rejoice. Those who brought you into the world would be again very, very joyful. That's the story that the Gemara says of Chaini Hama'agel. So the thing is. That and the Gemara goes on and says, excuse me, Shalchu b'nei lishkas hagaz l'chayni ha-ma'agil v'tigzar oimer v'yokem loch v'al drachecha ne'gar v'tigzar oimer ata geizrim l'mata v'akadosh baruch hu m'kayim amorcha milmala. You make a decree below and Hashem follows, instead of what we would imagine, that there's supposed to be gzeras melech, that Hashem makes the decrees and we follow. You make the decrees and HaKadosh Baruch Hu follows. So what is the idea over here? Normally, when a person davens, are they supposed to be like a child who's mischati lifnei aviv, who's obnoxious before his father and makes a demand and the father listens? Or what are we supposed to do? What do we call tefillah? Avoda. It's like an eved, abda kama mori, like a servant in front of his master. Where the person doesn't say, do this for me. The person says, please, 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 I can only have this if you're willing to give it to me. I ask you with all humility, would you be able to do it? The avoda of Yitzchak was the avoda of humility, right? Yaakov, Avram Avinu gets a mitzvah, go and bring Yitzchak before me as an offering. Avram Avinu says, I'm not going to ask any questions, I'm not going to challenge, I'm not going to say, but Hashem, you promised me that I would have him as a child and he would fill the world. It was the consummate act of deference. Yitzchak is tied down. The consummate deference. It's avdus. It's avoda. It's worship as prayer, where you turn to the Rabban Shalom and say, Rabban Shalom, we submit to you and we say whatever you wish you can do for us. That, in a sense, was the ultimate fulfillment of Tamim Tiyayim Hashem Alekecha. That they went, Avraham Avinu went with complete trust with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Didn't make sense to him. He didn't understand it. It contradicted his brachas. It contradicted his promises. But nevertheless, this is what Hashem said, and he went with him bitmimus. He went with him trusting. Yishmael has the opposite. Yishmael, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Hashem will listen to the child, whatever he asks. The child doesn't plead as a servant. The child says, do this, and we will do it. Yishmael is not the master of Hakna. We know that generally from Yishmael's personality. Right, the whole circumstance under which Yishmael was born was an inability for Hagar to really accept the mastery of Sarah, to accept to be under Sarah. And that's how Yishmael himself is described, that he can't live in society. He lives in the Midbar, he lives in the desert. Yishmael has no kings. There's no kings in the society of Yishmael, the way the Torah describes, because nobody is going to be accepting such lordship, such mastery. That's Yishmael. When Hashem listens to him, Hashem doesn't listen to him because of his deference. Hashem listens to him because of his mastery, because of his, look, he's my child. He's a child of Avraham Avinu, so I'm going to indulge him. I'm not going to do it because he's turning to me, you know, with proper kibbutz, etc., with proper, like a servant turns to their master. I'm going to indulge him like the child. And Jewish prayer is supposed to be that way. Now, Chayni Ma'agel, there was an exception. Chayni didn't pray to Hashem like an Eved prays to a master. And we find the Gemara brings a number of examples of people who were mitiach dvorim klape mala. They davened to Hashem as if they were shooting arrows heavenwards, right? Which is the term which the Gemara uses when it describes people who did not pray deferentially, but prayed confrontationally. Right, it's mitiach dvorim. They shot arrows heavenward. Which, by the way, what is the craft of Yishmael? Bamidbar vayhi roi vekashas. He lived in the desert and he was an archer. He shot arrows. This is his method. And I believe, and again, I'm not quoting this from the Maharal, but I think that to a certain degree, this is part of what we have to be mindful of when we run the border between using the name of Hashem in tefillah and using the name of Hashem by invoking the magical quote-unquote codes of the Shema Meforash of the divine name to be able to produce a specific prescribed result. That one has to be able to know the difference between the deference to Hashem and, so to speak, co-opting Hashem for our purposes. Co-opting Hashem for our purposes. The truth is, we find this even with deference. The Gemara says, not the Gemara, the Medrash says that Moshe Rabbeinu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, told him, Rav Loch, Al Taisef, Dabir Elai, Oid Badavar Hazeh. Moshe Rabbeinu pleaded with Hashem that he should be able to enter the land of Israel. And Hashem said to Moshe, enough, don't speak to me about this anymore. So the Medrash says, Moshe Rabbeinu offered, 515 tefillahs to go into Eretz Yisrael? Hashem said to him, Moshe Rabbeinu, if you keep davening, I will have no choice but to listen to you. I'm going to have to listen to you. But I don't want to listen to you. Not that I don't want to listen to you. I don't want you to go into Eretz Yisrael. So please stop davening. Because if you keep davening, you are going to force my hand. In the way that you want it. But not in the way that I want it to be. What does that mean? That means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling Moshe Rabbeinu, there is such a thing as being able to invoke Hashem, being able to exercise Hashem in a way that will bring a specific result, but it's not truly the outcome which HaKadosh Baruch Hu seeks. And one has to consider this. I'm not telling you, therefore, a specific, very, very specific practical result. That this is what you should do and this is what you shouldn't do. At a certain point you should stop davening. Chas v'shalom. The Chazal tell us that until you hear from Hashem, even if the sword is sitting on the person's throat, they should still be davening. Right? You shouldn't say, okay, I submit, I surrender, it's Hashem's will, and therefore we stop davening. We don't know that we've davened enough. We don't know that we've made enough of a spiritual effort in this regard. Moshe Rabbeinu kept asking until Hashem told him, at this point I don't want you to. But we understand that sometimes we can sort of take this manipulative approach, which is very, very much off the charts. The Gemara says that there's a negative thing called Iyun Tfila, and there's a positive thing called Iyun Tfila. The positive thing called Iyun Tfila is the person who prays very, very carefully, who considers carefully what they're saying as they're saying it, who prays very, very carefully. The negative thing called Iyun Tefillah is the person who dwells on their prayer in a smug and confident way and says, here, I'm going to pray and I'm going to dish it out so that there's no question that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to respond to what I'm saying. And that, by definition, is a contradiction to Avodah. Avoda by definition is not, you know, if I do this enough then he's going to have to do it. Avoda is avoda of dependence. So therefore, we need very, very much to be aware of this. When we're using even spiritual efforts that are, so to speak, halachically legitimate, but the spirit of Tamim Tie Im Hashem Aleikecha needs to be very, very much alive. Needs to be very, very much alive. You see this, the truth is, in the Pasuk. Because Rashi says you shouldn't probe after what's happening in the future and so on and so forth. Tamim Tie Im Hashem Aleikecha. And then what does the Pasuk say? You don't have sorcerers, you have prophets. So, Shkoyach, what do prophets tell you? They tell you what's going to happen in the future. So, you're also learning what's going to happen in the future. What's the difference between you and them, except that you have method B and they have method A? Right? It's the same thing. The difference is, a prophet communicates what HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him to communicate to you. You're not trying to dig behind the scenes and figure something out. You get the word from the prophet that Hashem wants to have. We want to be in a position of receiving from Hashem rather than a position of being on top of Hashem and commanding Him to do. Occasionally, I mean, Chazal did ask Choni HaMagol to pray for rain. Choni HaMagol prayed for rain in the specific and unique style of Choni HaMagol. And we find other such circumstances where they used it. I can't tell you that across the board it's forbidden and there's never a place for the child's sort of demanding prayer before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I don't think so. There is such a thing where the man declares and HaKadosh Baruch Hu follows. But it's not a simple thing, it's not a simple posture to talk about, to use, to invoke here. Okay, that's all I wanted to say about this piece of it. If you have any questions or comments, I have to take them before we go on with a little bit more about what the Maral has to say on this topic. Yeah.
It seems with Moshe Rabbeinu that it's maybe out of character for him to have stopped even though Hashem told him to stop. Because many times, a few times, you see Hashem says, be quiet, I'm going to destroy the nation and I'll make a bigger nation of you. And other examples. And Moshe, if Moshe, because I'll say I think that if Moshe would have taken the Israel into Eretz Israel, basically just would have been destroyed. So if that's better for him to fight Israel,
well,
why did he pick this time to stop?
So the thing is that Chazal in fact say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe Rabbeinu, for instance, by the Egel, he said, Hanicha li v'ichar api bohem v'achalem. Moshe Rabbeinu, leave me alone and let my anger flare against them and I will destroy them. So Chazal say what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling him was, Moshe Rabbeinu, I'm only going to do it if you leave me alone. So read between the lines, read my lips, right, that I'm telling you, you know, don't leave me alone. I don't want you to. Over here, while you could say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Rav lach al teisiv davar la'ed b'davar hazeh, that's a little bit more emphatic. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, don't say anything more. I don't want you to say anything more. Yes, in a sense that implies that it's up to you, Moshe. But over there, by the Egel, HaKadosh Baruch Hu seems to be telling him, I want to tell you this is what's going to happen. And the thing is that it's indicated. Because by the Egel, what happens is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Moshe Rabbeinu, I want you to know what's about to happen. And now, if you will just let me, this is what I'm going to do. Why is Hashem telling him? It's like when Hashem told Avram Avinu about the destruction of Sodom before he destroyed Sodom. He was welcoming Avram Avinu's input. He was saying, this is what I'm planning to do. What do you have to say about it? Right? Now, HaKadosh Baruch Hu also told Moshe Rabbeinu that because of this, I'm going to decree upon you that you are going to die. But that's not the same about just telling somebody what's going to happen to somebody else. Moshe Rabbeinu had things to do, had business to close. The tone of it was a different thing. And it didn't include with it, you know, and if only you let me. And he said it to him, this is what's supposed to happen. Moshe Rabbeinu davened, right? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, no, I don't want you to stop me from doing it. So, again, I won't necessarily be able to explain to you every phraseology or every bit of language in terms of how this one was read this way, this one was read that way. But Chazal understood that over there by the Egel, by those other places where Moshe interceded, Hashem was inviting his intercession. He wanted him to do it. And over here Hashem was saying to him, I don't want you to force my hand on this one.
The Gemara in Tanya speaks of many Tanoim who asked for rain and it came. Not in the sense of a choni amago, but just simply asking for rain, and the rain came.
Of course. Many times it was accomplished through the conventional methods of Avaida. In this particular time, they were not successful. They went through all of the routine that took them through Adar, and they weren't successful. So they wanted to go beyond, to try something extra, and they turned to him. Of course, many times, you're right, the conventional tefillah, the Avodah helps. In this case, it wasn't going any place, and they didn't feel they had any other kochot, any other abilities to bring to bear here in order to make it happen.
There's the concept of being a ben bais, as Choni Amadam is described as being a ben bais for Kodesh Baruch Hu. Give a dimension to his ability.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. He's like, again, like a child who has his father wrapped around his finger. Right? It doesn't matter what he does. Right? The father still is going to indulge and go along with him. Can do no wrong.
Isn't that palmistry? Palmistry? That, how does that fit into...
You mean reading the hands?
Yeah.
So that's part of this general approach of which would seem to be included in being Chaykar Achar HaAsidus. He has a chapter on it in the Tamim Tiyah. It seems, again, like... I don't think it was the derech that Klal Yisrael generally used in order to be able to approach things. I don't think it's Tamim Tiyah. I don't think generally it's Tamim Tiyah. If there's a person who's truly a great, great person in all dimensions who does it, so then, you know, you could take guidance from that person. But sometimes it's people who have powers, who are skilled and adept at a certain thing, but it's not necessarily part of a whole, part of the whole picture of Avodas Hashem. And that's really what it is. We would generally, you know, look for a chacham and a tzaddik, not a person who has a specific skill to be able to do these kinds of things. When it's a person who has a specific skill, then is when you have to be worried that it's not being done in the context of emunah and achna, of complete faith and humility before Hashem. Okay. The Maral, just to continue with the time that we have left, with a little bit more about what the Maral has to say over here on this issue. First, I would like to speak about one general thing which the Maral says, which is consistent to some degree with things that we learned from him before. When we talked about, Nekim and Neiter Kernachash. The Maral, in the remaining sections, in the remaining part of this section, he asks questions about a number of different instances that exist in the Gemara, where we seem to sort of be straddling the border of usage of Kishuv in one way or the other. And he distinguishes, he makes chilukim, he makes differences between them. This was okay, this was forbidden, this was a proper thing, this was an improper thing. And very, very fine lines. But the Maral says, so you might be troubled, you know, that why are we making such fine lines? Why are we making such distinctions? The Maral says that you have to understand that indeed that is in itself part and parcel of true Chachmas HaTorah. The easy way out is to say, you know, just don't do it leminei lemichtzasei, just to make sort of like an across-the-board kind of a thing. But to present Torah, to present the truth of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we want to be able to very, very sharply distinguish and say, this is what Hashem said is a problem. This is what Hashem said is not a problem. It should not be troubling to us when we find fine, detailed, intricate distinctions. It should be encouraging to us. Right? If you're going to take it and you're going to say, look, they wanted to do this, so they found epizadreidel, they found a twist and a turn in order to be able to distinguish. Okay, then you would understand. Then it's a cynical approach, and it's not right. It says in Maral, the Chachamim are starting with trying to identify that which the Torah says should be done, That's what the Torah says shouldn't be done, to identify it exactly and precisely and to be able to do things that way. Now on some level, when we have the dinim derabbanan, when we have the rabbinic laws that come in place afterwards, they do erase sometimes some of that finesse, some of that very, very great specificity, because they're worried about, you know, people out there on the street, and they're going to say, oh, if you let me eat chicken with meat, then I'm going to come and eat with milk, I'm going to eat meat with milk, right? So there's a clear distinction, and we can explain it in the verse, and we know, yes. So we're supposed to know and identify, this is the Din Torah and this is the Din Rabbanan. We're supposed to be able to tell the difference between those two things. But we are still worried about application. Chachamim Maor didn't legislate any place and every place. Where they did, they did. No, where they didn't, they didn't. And the ability to stand on and to identify, this is mutter and therefore I'm going to do it, that is a significant, significant piece. The Gemara says that there are certain times, the Gemara says, Mi b'chaysav shel adam nikir. The Gemara says sometimes you can tell from the way a person makes brachas whether he's a scholar or not. What's the example the Gemara gives? Well, if a person would say, Baruch atu Hashem, aleikenu melech haolam, shehotzi lechem min haaretz, blessed is Hashem who produced bread from the ground, you would know that you're making a bracha on this piece of bread that was produced in the past. If you say, Hamoitzi lechem min haaretz, it could be about something that Hashem is going to produce in the ground in the future. But on the other hand, linguistically, it's also acceptable that you would be saying that it's referring to the piece of bread which is here already. Says the Gemara, a scholar will make the bracha Hamoitzi lechem min haaretz, which is ambiguous. Why? Because he wants to show that it'll work too. That this works too. In other words, there's something about living dangerously when it comes to these things that says, I want you to know this is precise. This is what the Torah says, this is what the Torah requests, and therefore this is what we're going to do. Says the Maharal, so don't say, I'm troubled by these fine distinctions. That's the work of the Chachamim, who are trying to truly understand the words of Hashem Yisbarach in the Torah, that they're going to make fine distinctions. And they're going to say, this is Das Elyon, that says this is permitted and this is forbidden. You want to understand the truths, the eternal truths of the world, the truth of Hashem Yisbarach, get it on the nose. No vagueness, no generalities. Okay. That's one thing that he says here. Another thing that I want to just mention here quickly that he says here is where he discusses the issue of Zugais. I mean, some of you have been learning the Daf Yomi. So the Gemara in Psachim speaks about this thing that the sages were very, very concerned about, a mystical damage that could be found with having two of anything. Right? Having two cups of wine. Having two pieces of bread. Zugais. That's what they were worried about. There was some negative thing. Now, the Taisa says already we're not careful about this anymore at this point in time, because those negative forces are not present. They're not present, they're not perceptible. But at the time of the Gemara, they were. And the Maharal, in typical fashion, wants to explain what was the specific harm, what was the specific damage, what was the specific association that would be found negatively with Zugais. He brings it as a question, which he says again in following the model of Be'er HaGola, a question that people ask, that here you're worried about Zugos, that means you're being involved in sorcery, in some kind of witchcraft, in some kind of consideration with the other side. So the Maharal starts off, before he explains the particular issue of Zugais, he says, now that is wrong. That's incorrect. There's no question, he says, that while we are not supposed to invoke and use Kishuf, try to exercise Kishuf in order to change things, but we would be foolhardy to ignore the presence of these forces if they're there and they're out there in order to be able to avoid them safely. He says, when it says Yeshiv B'Seser Elyon, right, when we say a person, you know, at night goes inside because by Tirmais Kol Chaisa Yoar, right, we worry about the wild animals which are out there, which Chazal understood as being the wild animals and as well as the other forces which are there, they're warning us to be careful of whatever is there in creation that might cause us to have worries. And therefore, it's not, the prohibition against kishuf doesn't mean don't pay attention to anything which is there in those mystical worlds that we described earlier. Of course not. Of course you have to pay attention to it if you're coming up against it and it's going to pose a potential threat. The idea is you're not supposed to invoke it, use it to change things, but you are able to avoid it. So he says, and he brings all kinds of things about how we find that Daniel was considered the greatest of the Chartumim, and so on and so forth. It wasn't that he used sorcery in order to change things, but he was aware of its existence, and he was aware of its impact, and therefore he was most skilled in it and able to guide people to avoid certain things that would have been perhaps created by sorcery. So what's the issue of Zugais? So he says like this. Very, very, very interesting thing. Ki Hashem Yisborach kasher bora elamai yesh briya she'ena etzem habriya rakim nimshochim achar etzem habriya ve'ena mikra habriya. When HaKadosh Baruch created his world, he created its principles, its core, and he created things which are sort of just associated with it. Secondary brios. B'dover zetimtza b'nivram gashmim v'nivram gilti gashmim. We find this in both physical and non-physical creatures. Kimo haruchos v'hashedim. V'hem einam etzem habriya, aval hem nimshachim l'briya utfeilim etzel habriya. He says, for instance, we have these spirits that we have spoken about here, these things that we are worried about associated with the Zugais, etc., and with other things, that are not the essence of the Bria. They are secondary to the Bria. And we find it as well with physical things, like he says, Tayloyim ukiyetze bazeh, certain kinds of bugs or worms, that they are not the Bria, they're not purposeful for the Bria, they are necessary as an ancillary thing, as something which helps support the whole ecosystem and able to make the world continue. But they are not the essence of what it needs to be. So he says that's what we call shnius. That's what we call of a secondary manner. Kizeu kaicham. So he says that's why they exist by zugais. Because zugais implies that which is a pair, that which has two. Which means there's the principal and there's the tuffle, there's the secondary. And those things together are the what we're dealing here when we're dealing with these kaiches, when we're dealing with these forces that are secondary to the essence of the Bria, that's what we are speaking of. So that's the again, Nachamal, that's what the Maral says. Now that is a very, very mystical sounding thing, very, very vague, and I want to just try to follow through in a little bit of an explanation of this that really builds on what he himself is going to say here as he continues. It says like this. The Gemara says, Kalakere kriyashmal mitasai kilu eiches cherev shel shtei piyos biyadai. A person who reads kriyashma al amita, Kriyashma, when they go to sleep, it's as if they're holding a sword with shtei piyos, with two mouths. What does that mean, a sword with two mouths? It means a double-edged sword. A sword that a double-edged sword. You know what it is. And he says, because as it says, Raymais kelbi grayna v'cher piyos biyad. Why do we read Kriyashma on our beds? The reason why you read Kriyashma alamita, you know, we have a mitzvah in the Torah, you're supposed to read Kriyashma at night, right? In the morning and at night. You read it to open your day, you read it to close your day. But that, your Makayim, you fulfill that mitzvah when you read it at night, when you're davening Maariv. But we have a special additional thing that we say Kriyashma as we go to bed. Why do we say Kriyashma as we go to bed? So the Gemara says that the idea is because when a person is going at night, when a person goes to sleep, their soul leaves them. When a person goes to some degree, it's a high-risk time. At night, in general, is a time when we are more worried about these forces, because when people are at rest, these forces somehow come out. So we read psukim, read these verses, in order to enhance shmira, to save us, to protect us We read Kriya Shema as a protection. Divrei Torah provide a protection, but we specifically, we read Kriya Shema al Mitasai. Those are the words of Torah that we choose to use. And it's as if the person has a double-edged sword. So the Maharal explains like this. What is when a person has a single-edged sword? Well, it's not bad either, right? But the thing is, a single-edged sword, in certain circumstances, from certain directions, will be effective, and in other directions will absolutely not be effective. A cherev shel shtei piyos, no matter which way, no matter how you slice it, excuse me, right, it's going to work. It's going to be effective. The cherev shel shtei piyos is valuable all around. There's no point where its impact, where its power is limited or closed out. A person who says, so the Maharal continues and he says, this is the difference between the ultimate unity, the unity of Hashem Echad, and the unity of other creatures. Other things can also have unity and uniqueness, but it's limited. A king on earth, he's one. We say specifically, you can't have two kings. Two kings can't share a crown. But on the other hand, his unity does not make him completely unique power. Part of him is unique. He's the only king. But there's much about him which is common. Part of him is completely powerful. In certain aspects, he's completely powerful. In other aspects, he is not. Hashem Yisbarach is echad l'chgamre mikol tzad. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's unity is ultimate, is the ultimate unity, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is ultimately unique, ultimately powerful. Everything is subject to His power. The cherev shel shtei piyos, there's no point of weakness, there's no blind spot when it comes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's works. That's the idea. When a person says Kriya Shema and they invoke Hashem Echad, they close out any other forces which exist in the world. The idea of Zugais, and I'm not translating for you what the Maharal is saying. I'm sort of just trying to maybe alter it a little bit using principles we learn here from the Maharal to perhaps make it a little bit more digestible. We know that the Torah, the Chazal point out the fact that the Torah begins with a base, Bereshis. And the idea is because in creation, in creating the physical world, there was something of an undoing, as we discussed much earlier in the Maharal, of the Achdus, of the unity of Hashem Yisbarach. You have the creation, at least, of the appearance of other forces. Hashem gave people free choice. He gave rein to other things to be able to do things and to be able to accomplish. That's the idea that in Zugais, in pairs, where you have not just the essence, the be-all and end-all, the achdus, the unity of Hashem Yisbarach, the one force that's truly behind everything, but you see the manifestations, the multiplicity, the possibility of other forces, the room for alternatives, that's where the weakness starts. So we say, to in a certain extent, the physical expression of that is in physical pairs. When you have pairs, you have that base. You have that multiplicity. The cherev shel shtei piyos is the single sword that is a panacea, that it cures all, that it affects everything. And that's the achdus, that's the unity of Hashem Yisbarach, that we say in the Kriya Shema, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Now, ultimately, I think this example is a very good example, even though the Maharal is fundamentally treating it as just another example of an argument, a question about kishuv. But this really goes to the core of what we were talking about last week and this week, and with this we conclude, of the whole issue of kishuv. Is that when a person uses sorcery, the issue is that the person is turning beyond HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the ongoing, absolute, single master of the world. And He wants us to work with Him and within Him. Anything we need, we can turn to Him. Yes, within the Bria, He created multiplicity and multiple forces, and He gave us certain function and certain ability to do things which He asked us to do, which He wanted us to do. But ultimately, it's all because Nitna Rishus L'Raifei L'Rapai, so to speak. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, this is a legitimate effort. It's all still coming from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's all still coming from the Echad. To the descent, to the extent that we descend into the world of Shnius, into the world of multiple forces, it's to the extent that HaKadosh Baruch Hu instructed us and guided us to do it ourselves. To start pursuing other forces is really breaking up the Hashem Echad, breaking up the Tamim Tiyim Hashem Alekecha, to completely follow HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And I think I've told you in different contexts, at least I've told some of you many times, that, you know, the Rosh Yeshiva Zatzal, Rabbi Weinberg, my Rebbe, used to say that that the ganef, the person who's going to be dishonest in order to be able to get ahead financially or whatever it is, whether he steals, whether he cheats on his taxes, whether whatever else he is, so besides for the fact that he's certainly there's an issue here of the immorality of it, that the person is stealing and they're taking something to which they are not entitled. But he said the more fundamental problem is a problem of emunah. It's a problem of faith. What's the problem of faith? Because if we believe that truly HaKadosh Baruch Hu defines our situation, and Mizaynaysa Shaladam Kitsuvim Lay, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu decides on our parnasa and everything else, so we understand that to try to work around him and to try to do something that HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want us to do is heresy. It's nothing short of literally trying to say that, oh, Hashem said I shouldn't do this, but I'm going to use this, and I'm somehow going to somehow change HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plan. That's kfira. That's a failure of faith. In faith, we say that as much as we might descend into the world of the twos, and the world of the multiple forces, we always go back to Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. We always go back to that, and that's the guiding factor in everything. And that's the Aleph versus the Beis. That's the Zugais, in a certain sense, as the classic statement of the power of Kishuf that we try to avoid in any way we can. Okay, that's all I want to say about the subject. Next time we will go on to a whole other area that the Maharal is going to address in terms of the philosophy of the Chachamim in Halacha, and why it might, while it might seem counterintuitive, it is very much within reality.
The Gemara in Tehillim says that there's machlokes between the Amoraim as to whether or not there are